I didn't know what a podcast was before Marilyn Krabs, and now I can't live without them. Gavin Buckley, running for mayor.
Live from a grungy kitchen table located in Annapolis, Maryland's scenic and historic capital, it's the Marilyn Krabs Podcast. With each episode, your host, Tim Hamilton, John Frenet, and the occasional guest will dive in and pick apart the stuff that really matters most to you. We're too lazy to actually solve any of these problems, but we can definitely stir the pot. From schools, politics, parking in the fire lane, to those horrible people who drive BMWs. And here with this week's episode, live from the kitchen table, Tim Hamilton and John Frenet.
Hello and welcome to the Marilyn Krabs Podcast. We are back again. And in case you're just finding us, there's plenty of places to look for us, and you need to do that. Look for us on Facebook. We've got a page and a group called the Marilyn Krabs Podcast. You can also find us on Twitter at MD Krabs Podcast. You can email us at info@themarilynkrabs.com. Of course, the website that goes along with that is themarilynkrabs.com. iTunes, Google Play, iHeartRadio, all sorts of them. You can find us there. If you get us on one of those, make sure you leave us a review.
A good one.
A five-star review. Yeah, the guy button in.
A very good one.
That's Tim Hamilton, and I am John Frenet. We are the co-hosts. That's what it says on the fancy new business cards we got.
We do have them. They look really good. Your name's first, John.
So now we're kind of official, man. 30 episodes in, and it's official.
And we're celebrating with a drinking podcast, which is my favorite.
It is. It's the best kind. Cheers.
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 Wait,
there was a third cheer.
Yeah.
Hey, tonight we've got Alex Pline, who we've just learned is I'm going to say a rocket scientist, but he works for...
Actually, I have cards that say rocket scientist.
Very good. Okay, we're going to go with that.
They made us pay for our own cards when I first started at NASA, so I said, hey, if I'm going to pay for it, I'm going to put the title I want.
There you go.
When I was a single guy, I got a lot of mileage out of those cards.
Well, you could have had Alex Danger Pline and then rocket scientist.
Oh, I had a friend that is Secret Service, and those guys are just scumbags when they go out and they're doing advanced work for the president.
He doesn't speak for Alex or myself. I just want to make that clear
This is actually brilliant. Hey, single guys, listen up. This is brilliant. They go around and they work a room and they just talk to other gentlemen and they say, hey, what's your name? My name's Alex. My name's Tim. And you exchange business cards. So now there's 10 agents that each have everybody's business cards. So then they divvy them all up. So the agent then has a stack of somebody else's identity. Hmm. And then they go out and then they go hit up the women and they're, oh yeah, here's my name. And you pull it out. I mean, you got a stack of cards with the same name. I mean, who's to think? I mean, it's brilliant. You're not the Secret Service. It's awesome.
That is such a Don John story that Alex and I are not connected to.
You're sitting there going, where the hell is this going?
But anyway, investigate people. You realize that, right?
Yeah.
Thanks for having me on.
Picking up his keys. Well, you wouldn't because you rode your bike here.
I did.
Hopefully. Well, we don't know where it goes. And actually, Alex got on here because he started to give us a hard time on Facebook.
On the Eastport Forum.
On the Eastport Neighborhood Forum and Facebook.
You know what? I was trying to remember. And I remember we had a dust up. It wasn't quite a dust up. It was a while ago because I am...
We did, yeah. We've had a few exchanges probably here and there on Facebook.
It's after 11 p.m., right?
No,
we're fine.
There's several.
But my point is that it always follows that pattern. It's that someone will say something about bicyclists, you know, you have to bike, and I'll say, that's fine as long as they follow the rules of the road. And then Alex jumps in, and then it's typical. We play it out every time.
Well, any article on cycling, by the third, it's a universal law. By the third comment, it degenerates into damn bikers don't follow the law, drivers don't follow the law.
Yeah, that's
without fail.
Pretty much. But I think this time you were giving us crap, giving me crap or somebody crap. We were just discussing about parking. We were going back and forth with the city's new parking overlords, SP Plus. Has come out with some recommendations that are being discussed now amongst and if they're going to be implemented in the council.
That are not a surprise. I think there's a couple we'll talk about in a second, but there's a few of them that we saw coming. I think anyone kind of saw coming.
So first, I have to make a disclaimer. So I'm on the Annapolis, I'm chair of the Annapolis Transportation Board. This is a group.
So you're a political appointee.
No, and anything I say in this forum are purely my opinions. I don't speak for the board.
So I don't even have a position that I have to disclaim anything.
Yeah, that's true. No,
no one cares what I say.
Because I don't know how many of those folks listen to this podcast.
Right now, we're running.
Maybe
about
they will now. Because
right now we're running about 1,000 for the first couple weeks after it releases.
We have enough people listening that we've had some people pissed off. Right. that we've got some emails. Yeah.
So obviously, I have slightly more insight into this than the average citizen. You know, since we're a citizens board, we don't, you know, we're not really privy to the inner workings of
the
mayor's office and the stuff that happens there. But parking is one of the few areas that we actually have one really small statutory role is in the residential parking program. Mm-hmm. So everything else that we do, the city council on transportation stuff asks us for recommendations on legislation stuff. But we do have one little piece that if you want to make a change to one of the residential parking zones, that starts with us. So that's about the only thing that we...
But you're not regulatory. You just make recommendations, right?
Well, but in that case, if we deny somebody's request to make a change to a residential...
Like, give me an example.
Uptown at Murray Hill. So, you know, the development was done by Bazzuto.
Yes. The strip of townhomes.
Yeah, right on the single family house.
West Street.
Oh, that's zoned MX, mixed use. Well, in the old legislation, there was no provision for people in MX zone to get to participate in the residential parking program. So,
which is by the permit, and that they
right, can and then park you can park zone. On right. the street in the restricted spots for residents. So they came to us a number of times with different ideas, you know, all variations on a theme to participate in that program. And we basically said, you know, you live in a place that's mixed use, and the intent of mixed use is to be more urban. And there was never any expectation that you could have a parking permit there. This went on probably for a couple of years. And then finally, 3-4 months ago, they finally got something added to a change that we were making to districts 3 and 4, and eventually just district 3, which is Murray Hill.
Okay.
And the mayor put in an amendment that says...
Now, is this the current mayor or the...
Current mayor.
Okay.
Yeah, this was 4 months ago, I guess. Put in an amendment that said that, I don't remember the exact wording, but essentially Uptown and Murray Hill can participate. And it passed. And
okay.
So, but without going sort of around us like that to have one of the city council put in an amendment in some current legislation, it never got through us through the standard channel.
So you are somewhat regulatory
in that one small area. Okay. That's the only thing.
Well, that's a pretty important area.
Everything else is advisory. So when we're talking about the SB Plus recommendations, that's all our opinion on that is just advisory.
So explain to me, so the zoning, when we're talking about the districts, the parking districts, which are obviously different than the wards.
Right.
So, and it would mostly be downtown probably.
There's 5 residential parking zones. One is District 1, which is sort of...
That's the historic section.
It's
that's
a like historic
Prince,
section.
That's the Prince and the King Streets and
right, it's to
Main
the,
Street.
The north and east of... Duke of Gloucester, roughly. I mean, you can go look up the map, but
that's
District 2 is sort of to the... If you're looking down Duke of Gloucester, District 2 is sort of to the right. Then farther up Murray Hill is District 3. President's Hill is District 4, so that's on the north side of West Street. And then District 5 is actually the business district in West Annapolis.
And there are no districts in any... And that's pretty much all Ward 1 and 2.
Yes.
Except
for the West Annapolis.
Right. But so there are no parking districts in Ward 3, which is sort of outer West Street, Ward 4, which is down Upper Forest Drive, Ward 5, which is Middle Forest Drive, 6, which is sort of Eastport along with 8 and 7, which is Lower Forest Drive.
But you could, with the technology, and that's one of the things that we'd seen coming.
Which is kind of
frightening. Well, but so the idea of the residential parking districts is to balance the use of those between what I think of as three stakeholder groups. So one is obviously residents. So, and this really comes to a head mostly downtown, but residents, business owners, and tourists. So those are sort of there's other groups, but you can roughly bin them into those three. And what we try to do, in addition to the criteria that are listed in the code that we have to to follow when making.
I'd actually even go to the fourth one and say residents, non-downtown residents. That would
yeah,
be,
sure.
That would mean John
okay.
and I.
For the, people just coming to downtown, right. whatever. But so we try to balance the interests of those three, because if I were a resident on Prince George Street, I'd want that to be residential parking only all the time. Because when I come home from work, I'd like to be able to park in front of my house. If I'm a business owner on Maryland Avenue, I want free parking for everybody all the time.
And therein lies an issue. Right.
And if I'm a tourist, I want to just come down here and park. I don't want to futz. I don't want to cruise. I just want to get here and do what I came to do here.
I want to park in front of the store. I want to shop in.
Have you seen the tourist parallel parking? It is hilarious.
Yeah.
It's like they have to take a shuttle from the car to the curb. It's when they're done.
Right. To where?
From the car to the curb.
Yeah.
So that's
just the, step on my joke, John.
Yeah. That's the challenge. That's the challenge of the residential parking zones. And
well,
so
my wife and I, we moved here like 20 years ago. We didn't have kids yet, and we were looking around at Cornhill, right up from McGarvey's, because we thought that was gonna be great. And we found
God. That. Just think of how what a mess you'd be if that happened.
I know. I gotta need that distance from the bars. I don't need them like within walking distance, but. And we loved it. We loved the place was awesome. It was like right downtown, and we're like, and this was like in, we came down. It was like in September, and we're like, this is fantastic. This is going to be awesome. We're going to walk downtown. But then I'm looking around. I'm like, there was no garage. There's no driveway. Right. And I'm thinking, this is great on a September afternoon.
It's city living.
But in December, sleet and rain coming down, and you got the groceries, and you're looking for a spot, and you got to care. I said, this is all charming right now, but that's one of the reasons we didn't move downtown.
Not for everybody.
But then, but conversely, because I know that among the three groups you're talking about, well, mainly just two, which is the residents and the business owners, you have that push and pull where the residents get very upset because they see people taking up their parking. But then to me, I'm just like, well, that's what you get. You move down there. This didn't surprise you. So you can't complain about too much. Like, well, how would you like it? I wouldn't, which is why I didn't move onto Cornhill Street. So, but I mean, I'm trying to be, I'm trying to be sensitive. I'm really not.
The bottom line is just depends on your point of view. And you know, so since I've really been paying attention to this kind of stuff in the city, 10 years maybe, you know, the policies around parking have been very ad hoc. So nothing's really connected. You had the residential program, you got meters, you got the garages. In the fees for all of these things were, you know, flick your thumb, stick it up in the air. Does that feel about right? And, you know, really based on anything objective, it was sort of anecdotal. You know, well, I think, okay, maybe we should raise the meters more because there seems to be people parking around this time. But it's not really based on any data because they didn't really have any way to gather data. And so the city's been thinking about, and if you look at the recommendations from transition teams over the last few changes, there have been recommendations to modernize this and look at it holistically. So work the circulator in with the garages, in with the pricing of the meters and all that kind of stuff. But the city could just never get there.
And I'm cynical that every time there was an improvement, I knew that a bump in the parking fee was going to come along with it. So as soon as they said, hey, great, now the meters take credit cards, well, they didn't mention that they doubled the cost of it.
When Mayor Cohen was in, they had a really good guy in the transportation department, a guy named Ian Banks, who was.
Oh yeah, like, yes.
So Ian, yeah, so he like worked Ian. For he worked.
Hey,
for,
you know what? Odd story. Yeah. Ian sold me my bike.
He did. Yes, he's also co-owner of
Parvilla Cycles.
Another disclosure: I'm also the president of the Annapolis Bicycle Racing Team, of which Parvilla is a sponsor, and Ian is the secretary.
And he spells his name weird. He's not IAN. It's like IAA. There's another IAN.
Yes,
he would use
an
extra
British way.
He would testify once in a while in front of council. And I always loved
he did.
It.
He did the bicycle plan and everything. We're getting off track.
Yeah. Anyway, so
we're allowed to do that. It's our podcast. We can do whatever we want.
He started to bring some technology upgrades. So that was the electronic meters, and yeah. So we'll talk about pricing in a second. Let's not get hung up on that immediately.
Hung up on it.
But the idea was, if you have electronic meters, you can get some data. So the big thing here is, how do you do pricing in a way that makes sense? And in order to do that, you have to have some data. You can't just be, well, you know, I walked downtown on a Thursday night one night, and there was nobody parking on Main Street, so let's just make it all.
That's pretty much how everything is done in Annapolis,
it's
just
totally
anecdotal.
It's totally ad hoc.
We're on the same side so far with data.
So, like I said, the transition teams have recommended trying to modernize this stuff. And so I have to give Mayor Panalides credit. I mean, this was an idea that's been a long time coming, and they went ahead and did it.
And you're talking about the app or SP Plus in general?
Well, the whole activity was a holistic parking management. So, you know, we could quibble about how that was done. It was done fairly quietly in the mayor's office. Mr. G, did I say his name right?
Who's that?
Bob Ag. Sorry.
Yeah.
So he started with some presentations early on. I think it was in January of 2015, and there was a Ward 1 town hall meeting, and he gave a presentation and said, "Okay, here's what we're trying to do." So it was all very upfront. But they put the RFP out and did the selection, and you know, it was all held fairly tightly.
But see, I never understood why they went away from Town Park to begin with. What the issue? Like,
well,
I think it wasn't the fact that it was done so quickly.
Town Park was actually doing just a piece of that, just the garage piece. So the idea was to get somebody in who was going to do all of it. Because
there was bad blood between Town Park and the city as well.
Yeah, too. I don't know.
I don't think anyone does because I've asked even the gossip mongers and no one knows what happened. Well, I asked John.
Anyway, so the idea was to get a company in that has, you know, essentially subject matter experts that has experience managing these kinds of assets and can bring the latest, the latest ideas in pricing and parking management to achieve whatever policy goals you want to achieve. And so that's one more thing I want to make is a point that's really, really important. I think most people don't really understand this is that while SP Plus is a contractor that's operating, is an operator on behalf of the city, they're authorized, I forget what it says in the code, but they're an authorized operator to act on behalf of the city.
Like a power of attorney or whatever.
They don't make policy. They just do what they implement the policy that they're given by the city. So the decision on policy is what we, you know, in the government is what we call inherently governmental function. So that's all done by the city council. So, you know, rates, maps for parking districts,
times, locations,
times, all of that stuff. So that's all. And, you know, frankly, it's all spelled out in gory detail in the code, which I mean, that's a whole nother subject, right? Because to make any little change, you want to add a block to a parking district, you have to go through the whole legislative process. Mm-hmm. There's very little that can be done administratively.
Right. I've got a question. On your transportation board, are you guys in your charter or whatever the mission that they give you guys, are you tasked?
That's in the code too, actually.
Yeah. And I could probably look this up, but are you tasked with representing the interests of the residents? Mm-hmm. The businesses,
so it's
or
a
both?
It's all of the above. So it's a large board. We have, I think, there are 13 slots available. So it's a big board. So there's a rep from each ward. So I'm the Ward 2 rep.
Okay.
Then there are two or three at large members, and they don't need to live in the city. So we have a gentleman who lives in Arnold but works in Eastport and who's a transportation professional.
Okay.
We're trying to get a representative from the county on.
Hey, I live in the county.
There you go.
And we have a rep from the Naval Academy, we have a spot for St. John's, and we have a person that we're trying to get appointed to St. John's brought up.
So they can park their unicycle or whatever, or their dragon or whatever they know. They're all very nice people. They're just a little out there.
Yeah, so then we have a couple of business owners.
Josh.
So somebody, Ann Widener, has a business on Maryland Ave.
Oh, right. Peak House, yeah.
Yeah, and Beth Dolezal. So they were actually both part of the parking commission that got merged into the transportation board a few years ago.
Okay.
So we have some lively discussions because we represent all three of these stakeholders.
I mean, one of the big things that came out of this proposed recommendations that they had.
Yeah, let me just
give a little background on what.
Well, before you
how
do that,
this came up.
I don't want to. Is it a recommendation or is it a study? Because people said study, and I don't see it as a study. I see it as this is what we want to do. I don't see, and we talked about data before, that you had data, but I mean,
he's bringing out paper.
To bring this one because I can't remember all these things, just in case they came up. So one of the things that was
we should try preparing for shows one of the days.
One of the things that was in the contract was to do, and I don't like this term, the term that's colloquially used is the parking study. Is of which that's how people refer to this, but it's not. If you look at the title on the thing, it's a parking utilization analysis. Is the title?
It does.
Yeah, it says that.
And
it's got the logo on it.
So I don't like to use the term parking study because that It's pretty nebulous and it could mean a lot of different things.
Well, to me, it's very specific. It means that they took data and that they extrapolated from that data behavior
and prices. So one of the things people have always asked is, how many parking spots do you have in the city?
Oh, dozens.
You want to
Well,
know?
I mean...
I've got that information.
Up until that report came out, nobody knew. Right. So they actually went, counted all the spots in the garage, counted all the spots in the residential zones. They actually had people walking the street saying 1, 2, 3.
But do they subtract out like the 9,000 that the city has reserved?
Talk about that.
Yeah.
That's another point of contention.
It's a big point of contention.
Not with just with you guys, but on
I'm pretty attitude-y sure. about the whole thing. And let's stipulate this: John and I both are in agreement that there is not a parking problem per se in town. So whenever people bitch, I mean, not the way that
we have an information.
Not the way that
we have an information problem.
Yeah, and so I mean, when I get downtown, I rarely have a issue parking, but I also know all the sneaky places to park and everything. But I mean, that said, I don't, John and I are pretty much in agreement.
There are times that it's challenging.
Midnight Madness is certainly one of those times.
Sure. 4th of July, New Year's Eve.
Sure, but I mean, that's going to be parking anywhere.
Like trying to go over the Seven River Bridge on a Thursday night at 5 o'clock.
And you're not going to be able to park in front of the store or the business or the home that you want.
But guess what?
Necessarily.
If you go to Pearl Town Center, which I'm not a fan of Pearl Town Center for a lot of reasons, that's probably a whole other podcast.
But you
go there and you park, you're going to park for free, but you might be two floors up on a garage.
Yeah, the parking there is kind of screwed too. I will admit that.
You might have to walk as far as you walk from, you know, if you park in God's garage and walk.
And therein lies the perception.
It's totally
this four-story garage. Now, even though you walk the same amount of steps down to the bottom.
Now, that said,
as opposed to a block and a half away,
when I hear that the city has blocked off blank amount of spots then my hackles go up. And also, when it comes to, and I know no one has any control of this.
Personally, I would.
State Circle, that irritates the shit out of me.
Yeah, so I've been all over the. I've been all over.
Yeah, you saw me on the Eastport Forum. That drives me nuts that our legislatures.
Yeah, I mean, if it were up to me, I would give the city employees free parking at the Navy Stadium, and they can get on the state shuttle and.
And if they want to pay, they can pay like everyone else and get a pass.
But I don't make that.
Well, there's also that state-owned garage.
What is that called? I don't even know what that's called.
Whitmore.
Is it really?
Whitmore Garage. Yeah. And it's free.
I don't know how.
It's free on weekends to residents. So there's your parking tip. Right. Yep. If you're walking downtown, Whitmore Garage sort of backs onto St. John's campus. It's free on the weekends and evenings. When you walk out the entrance, make sure you go right. Don't go to left. Right.
They maybe did too good a job with the architecture because a lot of people can't tell it's a garage. If you look close, you can tell.
It looks like a McDonald's, but it's not.
Yeah, it's
no. It looks like a really ugly commercial building.
Yeah, they hit it reasonably well.
So let's go back. So we were talking about
back to
town
the
parks. Well, before that, town parks out, SP Plus is in. All right,
so they did this RFP. They had an open competition. They got a bunch of proposals. They brought them in. They did presentations.
And SP Plus is a player. I mean, they're everywhere.
They're all over the country, I would say, world maybe, but I mean,
they're all over the country.
So I think they had a fair and open competition. I don't have any insight into how all that happened, but I assume through procurement, the city procurement and legal, it was all done well, and they picked a good company. So they come in, take over everything. The garages. Taking over the residential stuff, because the residential permits were like in a box behind somebody's desk,
that's odd.
Yeah, well, so now
I would never thought.
Now they're essentially computerized.
There's lots
all
of things that are in boxes hidden in City Hall.
Right. So
300 anniversary coins.
Really right. Yeah.
So it's bringing some sanity to all of those things and get them to the point where you can generate metrics. You can say,
have you talked to SP Plus people?
Yeah,
personally.
Yeah, we have them come.
What's their attitude? Are they like, oh my god, what the hell did we get into? Or are they?
I think we're pretty small potatoes. I don't think.
Well,
no.
Have they given any indication that this? Oh my gosh, this was a mess.
So the guy that runs the operation here in Annapolis, a guy named Jason Perola, I've never had a beer with him. So all the interaction I've had with him has been in an official forum. So he's careful with his words. But I think they knew what they were getting into because the city. Disclosed in the RFP, they disclosed this is the current state and this is how things work.
And the city was probably, again, everything's screwed and everything, but it probably wasn't. I mean, they probably came in and said this is fairly typical.
But if you ever dealt with, a new contract coming on board and trying to really make some big changes quickly, like with modernization of stuff like residential permits, you know, there's going to be hiccups. And
there were. And I'm cynical, and I'm not going to, like, you know, the way they handled the kiosks and the signage, I thought was a little clumsy, right. And I can get irritated. But I will say it's to be expected.
Yeah. And, you know, for sure there are things they could do better, and we can.
And you can expect to take your lumps as you go.
Yeah.
I saw you eyeing up your beer over there.
Yes.
And I want to thank Alex Plein for, like, stocking us up on the loose cannon.
It's very hoppy.
Yeah, like I thought, loose cannon.
It's a departure.
Might be apropos for the
it's a departure from my Miller Lite that I drink by the gallon.
All right, I'm an IPA fan.
I am not. I am not high class.
Don't feel you have to drink it.
No, Tim
is cheap.
No, I like loose cannon because it's made right downtown Baltimore, so it's local and it's good.
Without a doubt. Well, the beer bottles are empty. We're going to take a little bit of a break and we'll be right back.
All right.
In 2015, Anne Arundel Medical Center had to transfer more than 1,100 mental health patients to a mental health facility outside of this area for care because the facilities they needed do not exist in our own community. These patients and families are our friends, loved ones, and coworkers, and they deserve better. Join Anne Arundel Medical Center and presenting sponsor M&T Bank on Saturday, April 29th in Annapolis at AAMC's Denim and Diamonds Bash. Denim and Diamonds is a wonderful evening under the stars, featuring fabulous cuisine, gourmet food trucks, silent auction, and dancing, all to support expanding mental health care in our community. It's an evening of great fun, but it's not just a party. For tickets and sponsorship, visit aamcdenimanddiamonds.org.
Of all the ways our customers can describe us, nothing means more than being their favorite.
Zachary's is the gold standard in customer service.
This is the absolute best jewelry buying experience of my life.
The annual holiday party for their customers is beyond a memorable experience.
They have the most exquisite jewelry, and the store atmosphere, it's the best around.
They listen, and there's never any pressure to buy.
We've purchased fine jewelry from different big names in the Baltimore area, but we were treated like family at Zachary's.
You'll not find a nicer group of people. They have my business for life.
Best in Annapolis is simply not enough.
Zachary's has been a part of many of my life's best memories.
After it's all said and done, there's one jewelry store that's my absolute favorite.
Zachary's. Online at ZacharysJewelers.com. More than a jewelry store, a jeweler.
And we're back, and we're all beered up. Well, Alex, he's actually taking it easy. He's outpacing us. We're here with Alex Plein, and it's me and John Frenay.
Yeah. Tim Hamilton over there, jackass.
So where we left off, we were talking about SP Plus. We were talking about so what we wanted to get into was the pricing a little bit, because this is where you and I are going to diverge.
One more comment just about the process here. So as part of their contract was a two-part. Well, it was a parking utilization analysis,
which is a 100-page document
to look at where we are. Look at all the assets we have, look at the pricing models that we have, and suggest changes based on data that they gather as they, you know, progress in this contract. So they've now been officially on board. You know, you get past the transition board. They've officially been on board since, I think, July 1. So January 1 makes 6 months. And part of the deliverables in the contract, and we'll get to there on pricing, is a draft study analysis of what they've learned so far. And then they're going to, it's sort of a living document. So they're going to go through, keep collecting data, because, you know, we definitely have a yearly cyclical thing because of the tourism. And so you can't look at 2 days in December and say, oh, well, that's representative. So they, based on the 6 months of data they have, they made some recommendations. They're going to continue to gather data and make final recommendations for this 1 year, and then they're going to do it again the next year. And so the idea is sort of a continuous, you know, a continuous evaluation. Part of the thing you have to realize is the recommendations in there are based on 6 months worth of data. So take that for what it's worth.
No, I think that's, I don't know.
They're just recommendations. I think a lot of people see this and they say, oh my God, that's what's going to be implemented. But the process
That's where I was, yeah.
Yeah, the process is they hand this to the essentially to the city manager, and then it'll go to the transportation committee of the city council, and they'll look at it and say, what of these do we want to implement? And so they're going to go through and...
All right, so here's where cynical...
There'll be lots of public debate, opportunities for public debate on what, if anything, gets implemented.
So here's where cynical Tim came in. So as soon as they came in, and we needed a modernization, I know that.
Yeah.
When SP Place came in, it was very sudden, and I no flags went up for me. I figured that there was just some stuff going on behind the curtains. But John and I were talking about it, and I was looking at it when they introduced the app that you could pay. And right then, there was two things that hit me. The first was, it drives me crazy about that fee. And I think last time we checked, we had the highest fee to pay.
Oh, so interesting. I went in because I know you rail about that.
I do too.
You
yeah.
both rail about that all the time. So I went and looked at, said, all right, what are Park Mobile's fees in other places. So the fees are essentially all the same.
Let me
qualify that. So they're the same, but some municipalities
are more the same than others.
No, some municipalities choose to absorb part of that cost. And part of
Making me angrier.
So part of the reason the cost went up is had to do with, and I don't completely understand it, that in 2012, there was this business with swipe fees on credit cards. There was some national brouhaha about that. And
it was like 2.3% or so, yeah, 1.7, I can't remember which it was.
Gas pricing was like amount. That too. It was separate prices for gas and cash.
So I don't remember the details there, but that had an effect of placing a higher cost for small transactions,
mm-hmm.
but a lower cost for large transactions, because you know if you're gonna do
margin.
If you're gonna buy a couch, for $1,000 on a credit
card,
you
can absorb the $30.
Right, but if you're only paying a $1 charge,
they may charge 4% on that versus 2% on the larger purchase.
So like I said, I don't remember all the details there.
But now my issue is
I believe that's what's responsible for part of the cost.
All right, so let's go back. We have to explain to people.
Frederick, I know you guys like Frederick. You were talking about
Frederick.
So
real time.
I went
hold on. Before you put a pin in that real quick.
Okay.
We got to explain to people what we're talking about.
Yeah, okay.
So what it is on the app, and it's a very convenient app, is that you put your license plate into it, and that when you park, you just look up on the sign, and it says you're zone 1227.
I did it this afternoon. I parked in the parking lot. I saw my zone was 1229. I put 1229 in, start parking, go.
It couldn't be more convenient.
Got your credit card on file.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Just put it in.
However,
it gives you a reminder when you're close.
It was great because I found a credit card on the ground. I'll just use that one. So
SP Plus charges in Annapolis 45 cents per transaction. Right. So every time you do that, it costs you 45 cents. So if you're going to park for an hour, which apparently is now $3, it is now $3.45. If you want to renew your parking,
that's another
45 cents. So if I'm going downtown,
it's the transaction.
10 times, if I'm parking 10 times a week, which is pretty much what I do, that's an additional $4.50 per week.
Right.
So we're talking, that's what, $9, $18, $180, over $200 a year just to pay for parking.
What are you doing those Steve Schumann skills?
Yeah, I know. So, all right, let's go to Frederick.
You can go on SP Plus's national website.
We did.
And you can look at all the cities they manage, and you can look at the fees they charge, and it'll tell you. So a lot of them are the same as Annapolis, but some of them
Bethesda
are less.
Bethesda was 35 cents.
I will say that when
some of them are less, but the reason, and
when they first launched,
speculating.
We must have been at the top of their price increase, because for about 3 weeks we were the highest price one. And then when I brought it out to their attention, I think I did a thing on Ion Annapolis, I turned around and all of a sudden they up Washington's.
You just screwed everyone in Washington. Bring ours down. John was bitching and complaining, and instead of bringing ours down, they raised D.C. The nation's capital. John Frenay.
They deserve it.
I can even pronounce your name right.
A lot of municipalities say keep that fee low and we'll offset it, you know, essentially with a subsidy.
But it goes the other way, where it says, all right, they're charging us 35 cents, and then does Annapolis get like 10 cents off the transaction? For example, I'm just throwing that out there.
Annapolis gets, the city gets nothing off.
No, then that's my point, is going, you know, then why? Oh, I see what you're saying. You're saying that
where
it's lower, that's where it's subsidized
municipality. So if you say, well, I'm going to charge 30 cents a transaction, for every transaction, Annapolis is, you know, the city will pay SP Plus the difference.
I see, but that's what burns me. How is SP Plus making their money?
Okay, so in the contract,
they got like a $7,500 a year contract.
No. So no, you didn't read it carefully enough.
Come on, John.
There's a base fee and an incentive fee. So the base fee is $5,250 per month. So that's
right. Yeah, yeah. It's
nothing. 60,
how do you make money on $5,200?
Well, so $63,000 a year, just by winning the contract.
Right.
So then they have an incentive fee, which is based on key performance indicators, and that's the thing that I brought because I can't remember them all.
And one of the key performances was this analysis.
The incentive fee is capped. So the maximum incentive fee, if they did everything perfect and we were just in love with everything they did, they would get $34,000 a year.
Okay, so we're up to $100,000.
The maximum Close. Total value of the contract is about $100,000
right.
a year. So given that, you know, you talk to other people, they'll have complaints about some things like the marketing efforts have been lacking. So, you know, I would assume they're not going to get all of their incentive fee. But, I mean, that's great.
How do they really make their money? And I'm not begrudging anyone. I mean, a company's got to make money. That fee kills me. That app fee kills me.
Part of, you know, that's part of running that app. They don't own that app.
I talk to them and it's Park something or other that owns
Park
the
Mobile.
App.
Park Mobile
that developed the app. Yeah. I talked to them, and Park Mobile charges them a license fee.
Right.
All right, so we're picking on SP Plus. That's not their fault.
To use the
Way to go,
no,
John.
No,
get
I'm
sued.
Not. But because when I talked to them and asked them, I said, so what's in your contract? What kickback do you get from the app usage?
You know, there's a guy at SP Plus right now
and they
screaming
were like,
at his
they,
iPhone.
They totally shut down on that. So they well, are, but, I'm sure
I mean,
they are.
Everybody has to make some money.
Okay,
right?
But yeah,
let's disclose it.
But that's where we diverge, is that it's one thing when it's a free market, but when it comes to it's a public utility that's offered, that's when all of a sudden I get upset when you don't have... I mean, I know technically that you can come into the parking committee and you can say... But I mean, most people don't know on this level when they're going to have hearings or what it's going to be about. And, you know, this is not a sexy subject. You don't even think right. about it until you're down there, you know, McGarvey's doing oyster shooters, and all of a sudden, you know, you find out how much it is. As a pseudo-resident, because I live south of the city, so I'm cut off from the rest of the county.
You're a stakeholder. You go down there.
That's where I get burned, is that it's not – because I'll say something like, well, I'm paying – they raise the price. I'll say, well, come on. In D.C. and Baltimore, it's this much. I'm like, but we're not D.C. and Baltimore. We're not. And I'm trying my best
to – the cost of participating in that app – you know, for SP Plus to contract with...
Well, and I have a choice,
you know,
too, is that I cannot use the app. I mean, that's where I am.
Right.
Out of principle. Am I going to spite myself and do... Yes, I am.
The thing about the app is it, for most people, maybe if you park every single day and those fees add up, you might do something different. But for most people who are sort of irregular parkers... whatever, 40 cents, I lose 40 cents on my couch every day.
Well,
so...
Come over to your house.
Note to self, go to Alex's house.
No, my
house.
Kids are like rummaging around in the couch.
All right, so the other part of this, all right, so the app is the app. I mean, that's me just bitching because, let's be honest, I'm going to use it and, you know, I'll gripe about it.
Yeah, I mean,
it
you're
the most convenient thing
you're,
in the
you're,
world.
Going, yeah, you're it is. Totally paying for that.
Yeah, and I'm going to. But we all know that. I'm going to get all feisty, but we know that I'm going to cave. That said, the other part that when, as soon as they announced that they had the app, you know, John and I got together and I'm saying, here's the insidious part of this is now... They can monetize any part of the parking zones that they want instantly, because they don't need the physical structure of the meters anymore.
Sure,
and that's in this.
But again,
analysis.
That's you can't blame SP Plus for that. So I mean, they're making some recommendations about trying to charge for parking in the for visitors. In the
no, and you're right. Zone. This is their job. No, I got it.
So
I can blame the city.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's totally fair game. They
but I'm not a voter either, right, so what do they care?
Well, and they make the policy. But you're a stakeholder, you can say.
Yeah. No. Well, I mean, the one thing that they're talking about is expanding the parking zones in the analysis.
Which residents love.
Well, yeah. No, I don't think they're not talking about expanding the boundaries of the zone.
No, they're talking about expanding the enforcement of the...
So basically, we only have residential parking districts where there's a problem. And occasionally, people have come to us to put in a parking district to adjudicate a disagreement between neighbors.
Good word.
And, you know, like, my neighbor has too many cars there. Let's put in a parking district to keep them from parking so many. And what basically what we tell them is that's not the point of residential parking districts. The point is to balance these three stakeholders.
So spite parking is not.
So, you know, if you're having a we don't want to get in the middle of the neighborhood dispute. But if you can come to us with a relative consensus from a neighborhood that you want to make a change, we're all about that.
Well, so, and Ward 1 probably comes to you a lot.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. But so,
but you
so
can getting, expand this. But theoretically, this could be expanded into Ward 8. They could expand it like wherever.
Well, no. So, well,
expand a city one.
Ward 8's actually an interesting thing, and they don't want it. So there, we've had people come wanting to create a residential zone on Burnside.
Sure.
And every time we've made, you know, they come bring us a bunch of signatures, and we say, oh, okay, sure.
Well, Ward 8 is pretty much satellite parking for the Naval Academy and for St. Mary's students.
So
right?
We can make a recommendation, but somebody in the city council has to champion it and propose some legislation, and that's where it all dies because nobody wants to do that.
Okay, I think we fish this pond out. Yeah, let's do some refills here, and then we'll come back and we'll talk biking.
All right,
let's do it.
If you don't like huge draft beer selections, don't go to Union Jack's. If you're not looking for an incredible menu and dozens of screens to catch your favorite teams, I repeat, do not go to Union Jack's. Not into darts and pool? Good. Live music, not your thing? Perfect. Bottom line, if you are not interested in the best dining and bar experience in Annapolis, avoid Union Jack's. But if this all sounds totally friggin' awesome to you, visit Union Jack's in Annapolis, just across from Whole Foods in the Annapolis Town Center. Union Jack's, not your old-style pub.
Very few things in life are so precious and so irreplaceable that we all must do our part to protect them. The Chesapeake Bay is one of those things. You can do your part by contributing to the Chesapeake Bay and Endangered Species Fund. It's that little line item you'll see at the very end of your Maryland tax return. Any amount you give makes a difference, and it's tax deductible. I'm Peter Franchot, Maryland Comptroller. Our bay and rivers thank you. Learn more about the Chesapeake Bay Trust at cbtrust.org.
Hey, we're back, and we're going to get into bicycling, because Tim said he wanted to talk about bicycling, and Alex is just an avid bicycler.
I have a bike. Do you have a bike, John?
I have a bike outside.
No, I don't. I know. You rode.
Did you leave your bike outside?
I locked it. I don't want
it. Yeah. You've heard about this neighborhood, haven't you? We'll see how you do after the ebb tide. We're going to get burgers after this. But you had said that there was one more thing that you wanted to beat on this parking thing before we jumped into bicycling.
And it gets to the pricing issue. So one of the things that I remember early on in the presentation, before the RFP was put out, was a bullet. And I remember this because I asked questions about this, is that the goal of this activity for the city was to be revenue neutral. So the idea was to not cost, to get a contractor in to do the holistic parking management, but not have it cost the city money. So when you talk about, well, how are prices set to make the city money? I would say that's not the primary goal. But I mean, you go back to that initial bullet, the city doesn't want to lose money on this because, as we all know, the city doesn't have money to lose.
Nope.
And they're not. Nobody wants taxes raised. So we all know those boundary conditions. So they do have to worry about revenue enough. And if you look at the KPIs, they talk about revenue has to meet expenses because the primary goal was to not lose money. So we could say, let's make all these prices really low, subsidize the app cost, all that stuff. But then the city's going to lose money, and they're going to raise taxes, and everybody's going to be mad.
Well, not me. I live in the county.
So
that'd be great.
So revenues do matter in the sense that the city doesn't want to lose money.
They don't want to subsidize it. That turns into a water plant thing.
Right. Exactly.
But then that temptation there is that if you just bump it up a little bit, you start making it not, and put it lower, seen, in the black a little bit.
I have not seen any indication publicly that anybody said, let's raise prices to make money.
Well, publicly
the meters
not.
Have gone up.
Well,
and
so
that surprised me.
That wasn't with a council approval that I don't believe.
So if I had to quibble.
But they need council approval.
If I had to quibble on any of the recommendations in here, I think that the pricing on meters for very short times is too high. So I think if you're going to come and park in a meter for half an hour,
get a hot dog at Pips or go grab some barbecue.
Yeah, but you can't park for half an hour. It's a minimum of an hour. I mean, that's an example. I went to go get a hot dog at Pips the other day, which are awesome. And so I had to pay.
Ryan, send us the $20, man. Shout out for Pips.
But you're not going to buy a cheesesteak with it.
There's no reason. I mean, these are.
It was $3 for an hour.
Right. This is all computerized. So there's no reason that you couldn't set a very cheap rate for half an hour, and then go up very steeply from there. So the idea is to make these spots in front of places you want to go turn over really quickly.
And since it's computerized,
price mechanisms have the result of achieving that policy.
Here's what I would do if I was king.
And if you want to put in one of the recommendations, is if you want to park in a metered spot on Main Street all day, have at it. It's going to cost you $50, mm-hmm. but have at it.
Well, that's so. What if?
And then, so just one other quibble I would have is that I think the rates in the garages, especially out as far as Park Place in Knighton, are too high. Because if you look at one of the things in the report...
Yeah, you're talking my language.
Yeah, is look at the utilization. So let's look at the data. If they're only utilized 50% during high demand times, the price is too high. So lower the price. Because ideally what you want to do is you want to distribute the demand. You want to best utilize all the assets we have. And the best mechanism we have is price. Because that's a direct market feedback that... People can choose, well, I want to park on Main Street all day because I don't like walking more than 5 feet.
Well, then, but people use the example. They talk about, they say, well, supply and demand, if people want parking. But I'm like, well, hold up. If I'm a local guy, and I got to be honest with you, I support local businesses. I do all my Christmas shopping downtown. I make that a point to do that. I know most of the business owners. But I got to be honest with you, in the last few months, we have gone down a lot less, and not because, you know, it's not going to break our bank because we're all kinds of loaded. But it's just because, out of principle, I get irritated. I'm punishing the businesses for the decisions of the city or SP Plus. And I think the thing during Christmas is fantastic, you know, all through December where it's all free. I think that is so awesome that they do that. But there are times where I'm like, you know what, don't nickel and dime me. I'm supporting these businesses and I'm supporting downtown when the tourists aren't here. So it'd be great if they reduced it in the off times.
Right. And
or if they get, they know my...
Because it's winter. The winter when demand is low, the price should be low.
But if I'm 21403 or 21401, why can't they give me a discount on parking because I'm local?
So this is one thing that the SP Plus is trying to work is arrangements with business owners to provide vouchers
for their employees
for their customers too.
All right,
but I've seen and I have seen this. I'm not going to call the businesses out, but I have seen employees from businesses on Main Street come out to feed meters. I've seen them do that.
Right.
So I mean,
well, and if they want to pay 50
just because they don't get garage spots like city employees.
You know, if they implement these more nonlinear pricing structures, the incentive to do that is not going to be there because it's going to be too expensive.
Oh, let's talk bikes.
Just the analogy that I like to give is, you know, if I had my druthers, I'd eat steak and lobster every day.
I love steak and lobster.
You know, but I can't afford it, right? So I don't.
You should try podcasting. And we have it every night.
If somebody said, well, let's just make steak and lobster free. Somebody, you know, we have a benefactor who's going to subsidize it. We're going to overfish the lobsters. There's not going to be any left.
Speaking of free, I've got a good suggestion. I want your opinion on it, but I want to throw this out to Mike Panalides, to Gavin Buckley, to John Astle, and to Nevin Young.
Nevin.
One of them who are going to be mayor at this point, and I can't remember what town it is on the west coast of Florida, a similar problem with parking. And what they did, I thought it was the coolest thing in the world.
Sarasota Springs.
I don't know where it is.
Tampa.
It could have been. But anyhow, on the back of the ticket that you get, basically in much kinder, gentler language, it says, oh shit, you overstayed your welcome and you got a ticket. That really sucks for you. It's going to cost you $40 to get out of the ticket. But if you can photocopy $50 worth of receipts that were spent in downtown businesses.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
And send it in here. We will waive it one time.
Can I tell a story?
That's awesome.
I shouldn't. I would never tell the story if I hadn't had a few beers, Arnie.
I mean,
it was a few years ago. And so parking enforcement and I have always done this dance. You know, that back when it was $20 to park in the parking garage and your parking, or it's $21, and then the maximum fine if they caught you on the street was $20. I did the math. I parked on the street because they weren't going to catch you most of the time.
Oh, sure. You play the thing.
Yeah. And they're just doing their jobs. I understood that. You know, if they got me, you know, that was their point that day. And most other days they didn't catch me. But it was at one time a few years ago, and I'm not going to name the mayor, but I will say that the market house was being reopened and we were all down there, and that I was standing there with talking to said mayor, and they had an assistant there, and the mayor had parked next to the market house, and they got a ticket. And the person who was working for the mayor said, why'd you take this car? And they said, because they're parked illegally. And they said, this is the mayor's car. And they said, well, then they should know better. And they walked off. And I'm like, that is gangster right there.
That's awesome. I love the thems who has and thems who don't. I remember for, I think it was the Christmas lighting of the tree, they were towing cars out of Market Space. Uh-huh. And there was like a Chevette there, and the tow truck came in. It was like, bang, boom, boom, towed it right off. There's a BMW next to it, a 7 Series.
You and your BMWs.
I know. And they bring in the little dollies and they're
like, with white gloves
on the flatbed and everything. I thought it was really, but I'll tell you, before we get off on the parking, I just want to say that if you're interested in parking, if you want to hear your voice heard, the City of Annapolis Ward 1 Resident Association, SP Plus, and everybody else is hosting a public session.
I like charrette.
Better word,
whatever. We used to have charrettes all the time.
March 28th at 7 p.m. in the council chambers in City Hall. And go there and let your voices be heard. The parking utilization analysis is available at annapolis.gov. And you can read that there. It is about 100 pages long. There are some things that are very, very good. And there are some things that are really, really horrible. And we'll say that. But if you're going to bitch about parking, here's your chance to make your voice known. Go there. March 28th, 7 p.m., City Hall.
There'll be lots of opportunity before anything's implemented.
Yeah, it all has to go through the council. It all has to go through the council. So, yeah. And now we're back, but now we're going to talk about bicycling.
All right.
Which is something near and dear to my heart.
Stop running red lights.
I don't. I'm like a Boy Scout.
I challenged someone that we were talking about in the break, and I'm not going to mention them by name, but we had this argument once.
I roll through stop signs. But then again, I probably do that in my car, too.
So I argued with someone we were talking about in the break. I'm not going to name them. But I challenged them in a heated moment, saying, let's pick an intersection. And for every car that runs a red light, I'll give you $10. And for every bicyclist that runs a red light, you give me $1. And we'll stay there for an hour. He would never take me up on it. But wow. I give them plenty of room. I can't, you know, even the Naval Academy bicyclists who take up the entire freaking road. You know, but I'm very respectful of them.
Good.
In that I don't hit them. And I don't.
And don't buzz them. And
I don't do that.
Although
I don't.
You'd like to.
I.
Well, I mean, you know, you have to. Sure. When I'm driving behind a cyclist, sometimes, you know, you're like antsy. You want to get where you're going, but you know, you take a breath and you think, well, so how much is this going to delay me? Maybe 10 seconds or something.
Yeah. The timing.
I was delayed. I was taking my wife. She was giving birth.
You know.
That didn't happen.
You know, the chance of hurting somebody is not worth any save time.
You're right. I mean, I've done the timing thing, you know, doing 75 versus 65.
Do you know what's interesting? And we're doing the anecdotal thing that we were just condemning before. So we, when I was
Very emotional, because when you're raring to get someplace, it feels like forever.
So I'm on your side on this one. When I was a kid in 70s and 80s, and we're doing that thing where, you know, our generation was awesome and all generations after us suck, which is stupid. But I will say this, is that all the local schools had the bike racks out front, and there was bike racks in front of everything, and you saw all the kids' bikes. And my daughter said that once. I picked her up, and she goes to Bates, and she goes, we have the bike racks here. She goes, no one ever parks here. And I asked my son, because he's in...
My daughter rode her bike to Bates.
And you probably got it. You got it from Child Protective Services, probably showed up at your house, because that's just insane.
No, she rode from West Annapolis.
When I was a kid, we biked all the time. And I don't know, maybe my argument about biking is that because people always say, well, in Europe they bike and everything, but we're not set up like Europe. We don't have that hub and spoke that the small villages that have grown, even Paris is right. Set up that same way. But here, because you said the other day, I said something about, I was bitching about something, you said, well, bike. And I'm like, well, I got meetings in Colombia, I got meetings, which I didn't. I was making it up.
Yeah, but peace. My wife drives a lot because she's a regional sales manager, so she's on the road a lot.
Right. So there's a practicality to that. I mean, in all honesty, I would love to see, in all honesty, I'd like to see bike lanes in so much as that I wouldn't have to, that I could, as a driver, right. I could drive by them. But I seriously would like to see bike lanes.
Yeah, I mean, I think, especially around Annapolis, because it is very compact. You know, the city is only, 8 square miles?
Right.
You can get pretty much, within a 2-mile radius, you can get, you know, from the Annapolis Neck to downtown or downtown to Parole. It's only, you know, that a 2-mile bike ride is pretty much within almost everybody's capability, unless you have some physical.
I agree with you.
Drink a lot of Miller Lite.
And if you have a place, and if you have a way to do it this comfortable,
And you talk about comfortable. I mean, I'm not going to go into the whole bike thing, but I had a bike. I was using it to help when I was losing some weight,
which was stolen.
And I'm going to get another one,
which will be stolen.
And the first couple times I went out on the road, man, I was scared shitless. Yeah.
So here's
Forest Drive. I mean, I would go riding quiet waters.
That's the other
so
thing.
Here's the thing. All right, so here's here's a comment that I want to make.
People cross Forest Drive by the McDonald's.
And I give wide berth when I go around too.
There's five kinds of people that ride bikes. There's the strong and fearless. Those are like people, not jobs like me, who ride anytime, anywhere.
And right.
Then there's enthusiastic and
you'd
confident.
Have to describe to me what they wear, though, because I can tell them by what they wear.
Well, but
right. Bike shorts with no underwear, bike shorts with underwear, and then basketball
shorts. I would ride down Forest Drive on my Schwinn in what I'm wearing in street clothes.
There's no way I would do it.
Right. Well, anyway, so.
And we'll point out he's not wearing a Speedo.
No,
okay, he's got
so then there's sort of enthused and confident. Those are like your average recreational bike riders. And then there's the big group that's interested but concerned. So the person I put, my wife is perfect in that group, where we'll ride downtown to go to the farmer's market, but if she has to go on a road that's uncomfortable, she's not going to do it. And then there's the people, no way, no how, they're just not going to ever ride a bike.
And I ought to probably ride bikes.
I wouldn't do it on Forest Drive.
Well, right, so I would.
Carlster walks on Forest Drive.
The interested but concerned.
Yeah, category.
That's like 65% of the people.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it.
And then there's another category of what we call the hidden cyclists. That's the
cyclist curious.
No, that's the guy on the
no
old
one
mountain
that. Bicycle curious.
No, the guy riding a mountain bike on the wrong side of the road,
no,
just trying
me.
To get to his job. You know, those are people that don't go to bike advocacy meetings.
It's a vehicle.
It's a vehicle. But, I mean, the people in all of these groups, we're talking about transportation cycling. So not like I'm putting on my spandex and going to train.
So how would you improve it?
The biggest
practically,
thing,
though.
Yeah, practically. So we do have challenges in Annapolis because we do have rivers and peninsulas and, you know, we have some geographical constraints. But the biggest complaint that I have is that nothing connects. And I'll tell you, the thing that just makes my blood boil, I go through here on the way down here, is that freaking fence on Victor Parkway.
Oh, yeah. Well, get me started. Shut down Forest Drive whenever there's an accident, the police never open that up. Sorry, Amy, but they don't. And that pisses me off because that would alleviate so many problems.
Right. I get why it's there, because they don't want cut-through traffic and cars.
And they don't want people stealing bikes.
But what I mean, put some bollards so you can ride a bike there. They finally, Josh Cohen got the pedestrian gate opened.
Mm. Right.
He finally sat out there,
which is large enough to get bikes through.
Right. But it's
stolen.
You know, but you got to drive up. You got to ride up on the
sidewalk.
And
around.
People usually
down.
Park their cars so you can't. It's a hassle. Like why not just take that out? And virtually every new development that comes into Annapolis, even if they're good urbanism, infill development. Keeps all the environmental people happy, keeps everybody happy because it took a parking lot and it's putting some houses in or something. It's, you know, sort of good infill development. Well,
I know the Bacon Ridge Trail that they're doing, and that's more geared toward mountain biking and whatnot. I mean, I know they're looking to ultimately make that a huge connecting thing, but you're talking more about commuting.
I'm talking about...
But yeah, that's the practical side to it.
Just
road biking.
Just transportation. I'm looking to go
from
my house.
I want to go to Maryland Avenue. I want to go
downtown, and I don't want to drive my car because... Like you could be like me and you're cheap.
Save money. You don't have to pay that 45 cents.
I have to say, we have two. My family has two cars, but my wife uses one to drive a lot. My kids use the other. And
how old are your kids?
So I have a sophomore in college.
Do you really?
And a senior in high school.
How old are you?
Yeah, 56. Well, I'll be 55. Be 56.
Dude, no, you're not. I thought you were my age.
No, man, I'm aged.
Holy crap! I got to ride a bike, man. I thought you were like mid 40s.
Oh, well, thank you. I'll take a compliment for anybody.
So we're here with old man Alex Fleming.
No, but so you know, it's just easy to get around the city. You don't have to pay for parking.
But it's not. But the problem is, so if you look on Chesapeake Ave, which is which goes from 6 to the Eastport, they have a bike lane, and there's nothing. It doesn't connect from to anything. That's kind of ridiculous.
Right.
I mean, it's sort of like, we'll try it.
So there are other spots, and you know, again, we have to deal with the geography that we have, and you know, you're probably not going to put a bike lane down Main Street.
Which is fine, but I mean, Forest Drive, could you do it?
But the big thing is you shouldn't have to drive on Forest Drive. You shouldn't ride a bike on Forest Drive. It wasn't meant for bikes.
Mm-hmm. Well, but
Forest Drive wasn't meant for anybody but cars. I mean, I want to come back and we can talk about transportation in general sometime.
but that's my point. Like, so when you were calling me out the other day saying, why don't you, because I live, I have to take Forest Drive 90 times a day.
Especially all of the development that's happening on Forest Drive, in the new development, it's this pattern that gets into, it's this land use pattern that's very auto-centric. So you basically have all of the, you know, all the traffic goes out onto one road. Nothing connects.
Auto-centric, I've never heard.
Right. So, well, I mean, the idea would be if you have low traffic side streets that can connect on a bike, you don't need a bike lane because a street where people drive 10 miles an hour is comfortable.
They put a bike lane like half-heartedly between Bywater and what's the other one that goes
right, like where the CVS is?
Beyond that. I guess you're right. Yeah.
It's
like two right, blocks long. I'm like, what the point was that?
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, and if somebody had some money and some political will, you could extend that's a hiker biker trail that goes all the way down past the Safeway. That should go all the way down the neck.
I agree with you, yeah, because that's my problem. My kids want to ride their bikes. I'm like, you can't. I don't want you to run on the bay. You can't do
simple,
it.
How did, I'm over here in sort of Eastport Light. Mm-hmm. How did you get from West Annapolis here? Did you come out?
So I came down.
Didn't smell at all?
King George through to downtown.
Okay.
You know, of the Eastport
down
Bridge.
Down at Bay Ridge. And
of course, with a stop at the liquor store.
Right.
And then...
Dude, if I did that bike ride, I'd be talking about it for 2 weeks, about how I bike rode
so
across town.
4 miles or something? And it took me 20 minutes?
I get annoyed if I had to drive 4 miles.
I mean, it probably would have taken me 15 minutes to drive. Actually, probably would have... of the traffic on 50, probably would take me 15 minutes to get out of West Annapolis.
That's true. But, that's true. I see that all the time. I see bikers.
So I think if we concentrate on, you know, a new developments to try to connect these things so that there are, you know, direct ways that you can ride a bike that don't funnel you out onto a heavy traffic road, people will be like, yeah, it's easier for me to ride my bike.
It's a no-brainer. You mentioned earlier Ian Banks, and I know that he was working on a bicycle master plan.
It was approved by the city in 2011.
It's a bicycle master plan.
It's got about an inch of dust on it, but...
But it has not... done anything was a good plan. I've not seen it.
Talk about biking, I think that any administration is going to roll their eyes because they have so many things ahead of that.
It talks about all of these kinds of things I've just been talking about. And, you know, bike facilities or being bike friendly isn't just about, well, let's carve all this out. It's sort of a mindset. What can we do? There's lots of little things you can do, like little connections and stuff like that.
Do you love to see? And we were talking about this.
They don't cost any money. So, I mean, it's one thing to say, well, we're gonna build this big bike facility that's going to cost $5 million. Like, the county executive wants to put a bike bridge over Route 2 at the Anne Arundel Community College for $7 million, which...
We need a bridge over a Forest Drive.
You know, lots of little things you can do on these connectors to sort of connect places and ways for people to ride that... That'll make it easy. So, you know, granted, if you're going to D.C. or you're driving around for work, you're probably not going to replace those trips on a bike. But if you're just going downtown, if it's an easy bike ride and it actually saves you time and money, you do it.
Think about this, though. And we were talking about this. I saw this in D.C. We went down, a few months ago, and we were down in front of the Reagan building, and they had those bikes that you can rent.
Bike share.
If you had one in Eastport, you had one downtown... One maybe, I don't know. Yeah, it's Weston, exactly. You had those three.
Is this actually in the bike master plan? That's an idea.
I'm telling you what, I would park in Eastport because I would park in Eastport. You know,
shopping center where
as much as I like bike share, we don't really have the economy of scale to make it work here.
You don't think?
No.
There's a company, I don't know if they're still around. It was a great idea. They did the mopeds or scooter revolution.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, remember, and it was a great concept, and they rented scooters.
They were up on West Street.
You could do that for bikes, too. You know, you could, I mean, you really could. I mean,
wow,
it's,
I got to check and see if they're still
around. I mean, it's been
around,
very
great concept.
Capital Bike Share in D.C. has been very successful, but it's a very large organization.
Wow.
And they have a lot of bikes.
Is it a nonprofit?
I don't know the details of how it's run, but it's I believe it's a nonprofit. But they have to do things like... They have to reorganize bikes because occasionally you get a bunch of bikes at one place.
And yeah,
they
I know.
To, you know, they have a rental truck that comes by.
But the bright side here is that we're such a small town, and people forget we are a tiny town here. I mean,
but somebody has to pay to maintain them and do all that stuff, and it doesn't really work. If you had 20 bikes, it doesn't really.
If I could park at Knighton up by Lemongrass for cheaper, and then grab one of the bikes there, even if the park. Think about that. Right. What if you had bikes stationed at every parking garage? you know, that you park at the parking garage and then you could use a bike. I'm telling you, we would use the helmet.
You know, I think you got tourists using the parking garages. I think you need to have a scenic byways type of a...
But still, start
a map like, hey, go here and look at this and everything else. You know, I totally...
I just think the economics worked, Tim, is the problem.
Just shoot down my dreams, Alex.
I would love it.
All right, well, I'll tell you, I totally misjudge Alex Plein on this guest because we need to have you back, okay? Because there's like a wealth of information in that head that's far extended beyond this the hour that we give the podcast.
We're still going to argue online when some asshole on a bike cuts me off. I'm going to take it. I'm going to say, Alex, you're their king. I'm going to take it on you.
But yeah, no, I definitely. I mean, I think these conversations and some more are probably well worthy of a little bit more
drinking.
Deep delving.
Oh, I think I mentioned, you know, the nexus between transportation, land use, and municipal finance is huge, and it gets at the. We could maybe use this for a teaser for another podcast. Is the issue of traffic on Forest Drive? I mean,
bring it on.
Well, I mean, because there is no solution. You know, as much as you want to say, well, we can engineer a better solution.
I think we can only make it worse. I don't think we can make it better.
Well,
I'm being pessimistic.
I could debate you on that.
We're going to do this. We're going to drink some more, Alex, and we're going to debate the hell out of
that. Everything's a trade-off.
Our reservation at the Ebb Tide.
Oh, yeah. Best burger in town, too.
Is coming up, so.
All right, so that said, Alex, thanks for coming on.
Thank
and
you
what
guys.
We're going to talk
well,
about is,
fun.
Alex, you know where you can find us? You can find us on
I
Facebook,
do.
Alex.
Yes, the Maryland Crabs Podcast.
Yep, we have got a page
and
a group. Look, Alex is on top of it. You can find us on Twitter at MD Crabs Podcast. You can go to our website at themarylandcrabs.com. You can email us at info@themarylandcrabs.com. You can find me at TimHamilton47 on Twitter. You can find John Frenay at Ion Annapolis. And you can find
Alex.
Alex
at 128.
I'm on Facebook, but also teampline.org is my blog, teampline.org.
Uh-huh. And you're on Twitter, too, because I see you.
And I'm on Twitter, Alex Plein. So pretty much all social media, one word, Alex Plein, you can find me.
And I'm going to switch all mine to Alex Plein 1.
And you are an incredible advocate for biking. And, I mean, obviously, you've walked the walk and talked the talk. You've biked over
bike.
Here.
Yeah.
We'll see if we can talk you into driving to the Ebb.
Yeah, I was going to say, I am not biking to the Ebb.
If you guys want to drive me, I'm happy to take
all right, Alex. Hey, thanks for coming on. We're going to have you back.
This has been the Maryland Crabs Podcast with Tim Hamilton and John Frenay. Sure to follow them in all the regular places, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and online at themarylandcrabs.com. Take a moment to rate us on iTunes. Now, get the hell out of my kitchen. Seriously, go!
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.